May it please the court. There are three distinct issues in this case. In point one, I argue there was insufficient evidence to support Mr. Jones's conviction for armed criminal action in connection to the burglary charge. In point two, I argue there was insufficient evidence to support Mr. Jones's conviction for resisting arrest. And in the third point, I argue that the trial court abused its discretion in denying Mr. Jones's trial counsel's request for a continuance. With the first point, regarding the armed criminal action, there are two relevant questions. The first is, if no one sees the defendant enter the inhabitable structure, can he still be guilty of armed criminal action simply for holding a gun while entering? And the second,
Before we move on, I mean, let's assume that that's correct, it's a correct statement of the law. This woman testified, I turned around and I seen man coming in my garage, dressed in black, everything was in black, the jacket, gloves, black gun, everything was black. So why isn't I see him coming in my garage with a gun sufficient, even under your standard?
You have to look at the totality of what the witness said. And so the sentence you're referencing states, when I heard the garage go back up, I turned around and I seen the man coming in my garage dressed in black. So you look at that line, when I heard the garage go back up, I turned around. We know from Ms. Harvey's earlier testimony that the garage starts going back up after it has been triggered. So even in the line where she says coming in, she doesn't turn around until after she hears the garage door going back up.
And you're saying he had to started coming in or cross the line in order to trigger it up. But
what
in the law requires her to actually see that first moment? If he's holding the gun, why can't the jury infer it didn't appear out of no place or transport there? It had to be out or she would have seen him pulling it out. I mean, the jury doesn't have to draw that inference, but why wouldn't that be a reasonable inference for them to draw in these
facts? I think in the light most favorable, Mr. Jones did have the gun out when he entered the garage.
So why does it matter if she saw it or not? If he used it to gain entry, he had it there, didn't know if somebody would be seeing him or not.
Because according to State v. Hopkins and State v. Carpenter, as soon as the entry takes place, the crime of burglary has been committed.
And if he had the gun out, then why isn't that using a weapon to gain entry? He used it, whether he needed to have used it or not is not the question under the law. It's whether he did use it.
Yes. And so the intent to use is different than the use. Burglary is a crime, or it's not a crime against a person, it's a crime of an illegal entry.
If he had the gun out when he entered the garage, whether she saw it or not, why isn't that sufficient for burglary?
Because if she did not see him until after he had
triggered... Why does it matter if she saw him?
Because if she didn't see him until after he triggered the sensors, triggering the sensors, the crime of burglary is over.
Yes.
And according to State
v. Hopkins, and if he had the gun out then when he triggered the sensors, why isn't that adequate for burglary?
Why are those cases right, and why are they not wrong?
Because
that someone has to see this happen.
Because to be guilty of armed criminal action in connection to the burglary, he has to use the weapon, here a gun, to actually help with the entry.
And so, having it out as you go in a house, it wasn't because his hand, he needed to have something in his hand, it was because it was helping him with the burglary.
Well, I believe it's to help him commit the robbery once he's inside. So under Carpenter and Oboski, or some people would say Obasagi, my office has represented him before, he pronounces it Oboski. So under those two cases, Court of Appeals has held that you either need to use the gun to actually physically let you in by breaking a window or shooting a hole through a window or door, or to physically threaten someone. And the difference between Carpenter and Oboski is that Carpenter said explicit threat, Oboski says you can also have an implicit threat.
And what in the statute supports that?
This court has held in State v. Reynolds that it's not interpreted that statute to mean it's not the intention to use, it's without actual use, it's not enough to convict under the statute.
So if he triggers the garage door, doesn't use the gun to trigger the garage door, then he's not using the gun to commit the burglary, which is illegally entering with the intent to steal.
Yes, that is my argument, Your Honor, that he didn't use the gun to threaten anyone, he didn't use the gun to physically get in, and therefore the gun was not actually used as required by the statute according to this court in State v. Reynolds. Now,
it's essential to your argument that you said that the crime of burglary ends with the entry.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you've got Court of Appeals cases that certainly would support that.
Yes, sir.
But why is that the right conclusion? I'm not sure that a man on the street would draw that conclusion, since it would seem that the burglary goes on as long as the burglary is going on. You talk that it's not, at least on television, uncommon for them to say there's a burglary in process, which under your theory would be impossible. You could never have a burglary in process.
Well, that you actually can under the statute. So a burglary is either an illegal entry or it's illegal staying after you've been asked to leave. He was charged with an illegal entry.
It's not a crime until you've legally entered. It's not a crime until you refuse to go.
Yes.
And the instant that you refuse to go, the crime is over, according to you.
Yes.
So how could that be in progress?
Well, but that's a difference. So here is
you're saying as soon as you enter, it suddenly becomes a remain. And the question is, why? Why isn't it still part? You broke in without permission. Why does it suddenly change to the second half of the statute? Why isn't it still part of illegal entry? And you, it's not that you were legally there and left. That's what the remains refers to, not what happens the moment after you're in the garage.
Well, the crime is complete as soon as you enter. So if
our question,
it can be charged either way, can it?
It could be. But here he was charged with an illegal entry.
The question is that correct? Why isn't your illegal entry continuing? You illegally entered and you continue illegally entering the house. Why does it suddenly change to illegally remaining once you take those that one step inside?
Well, there's nothing within the statute that would suggest it is an ongoing crime.
But you're saying that it's complete, the crime is complete, means the same thing as the crime is over. Why is that a reasonable construction? Just because he is now guilty of burglary doesn't mean the burglary. Why does that also mean the burglary is over? Why couldn't the burglary continue?
Well, or I'm wondering if you're trying to make it two crimes, if that's really what you want to do. That's over, and then if he remains, that's another. I mean,
it certainly could be. There's certainly precedent for, and I don't know about in the burglary context, but it certainly could be. I don't disagree with that. But here, the Court of Appeals in State v. Hopkins stated
every burglary would be two crimes under your analysis with what Judge Fisher said.
Well, not necessarily, but it certainly could be. And
well, it wouldn't be if no one is there or no one says leave.
Yes.
And so you'd require for there to be, other than a split-second crime, you would require there be someone there to say, you have to leave.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or
in the second half, doesn't it require that you're there legally,
right,
and someone tells you to leave?
I think so.
Would never be two crimes under your assessment or the cases you cite from the Court of Appeals. It would only be a split second crime, and there would not be a continuing crime.
Well, I'm not sure, and I can honestly say I haven't really thought this through. But I do know based on the past Court of Appeals cases that burglary is a crime of an illegal entry. So once you have committed that entry, the crime has been complete, and any conduct subsequent to that is irrelevant.
Well, in fact, you're not doing what Judge Breckenridge asked about. I mean, you're saying they should have charged him with the second half of the statute, remaining on the premises illegally.
I think there was evidence that he did do that crime, that he did remain. Once he is encountering with Marte Harvey, I believe they could have done that, yes.
Then he would have asserted double jeopardy issue, correct?
Possibly. But I don't know that it's relevant to this analysis where he is charged with an illegal entry. And so the question is, did he use a weapon to effect that injury?
So here, he could have come in, and if the driver of the car moving the groceries didn't see him, come up and hit her on the head and knocked her out, and it would not have been burglary because she didn't see the weapon.
Well, it would have been burglary. It wouldn't have been.
He'd already finished it. He already finished it.
It would still be burglary, and he would certainly be charged with assault for that and charged with armed criminal action for that assault.
But
it just
not
wouldn't
for the
be
burglary.
Armed criminal action for the burglary. I would agree with that, Your Honor.
If he'd have shot her in the back of the head and killed her, it wouldn't be felony murder because the felony would already be over. It wasn't in the commission of a felony because the felony was over. The burglary was over. Is that your position?
If he shoots her from inside
He comes in the house, so the burglary's over,
yes.
And then he shoots her in the back of the head and kills her. That's not felony murder.
That is my position. That is just murder in the first degree. So he
because it wasn't in it wasn't in the commission of
felony. Under that charge, he would still be guilty of burglary. He would still be guilty of murder in the first degree, and he would still be guilty of armed criminal action in connection with that murder in the first degree. He just wouldn't be guilty of armed criminal action in connection to the burglary.
And he wouldn't be guilty of felony murder.
And he would not be guilty of felony murder.
Well, you can commit a robbery and have somebody have a heart attack after the robbery and still be guilty of felony murder, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, not under your theory, because the robbery is over as soon as both force is used and the property is taken.
Well, felony murder talks about the expected outcome or what happens afterwards. So it depends entirely on the different factual situation, but it's at least possible that...
I think the key question is, to you, why is the Court of Appeals, why are those opinions correct versus why are they not correct?
Because burglary is not an ongoing crime. Once you have committed the illegal entry, you can't take it back, and it's already completed. Once you enter, it's not like you can leave before someone sees you and you haven't committed the crime. You have committed the crime as soon as it has occurred. It is an illegal entry, and that's what matters.
And if there are if there is circumstantial evidence that you had a gun as you were making that illegal entry, why is that not armed criminal action?
Because you did not use that gun to help the entry. If you didn't,
if you had it with you and had it out, why are you not using that gun to help the entry? You didn't need to effectuate by shooting someone, but having it out is effectuating your entry for the eventuality that some you'll need to use it.
Well, it's to help with the robbery if that occurs. It didn't help with the entry. In State v. Carpenter, a man had a rifle, so he's not hiding anything.
Why would I have the gun out unless I think it's going to assist me? I mean, you don't just walk around with a gun. You take it out when you're entering because you think it's going to be of help.
Well, so, this court stated in State v. Reynolds that the intent to use is not what matters. And at that would be the intent to use if you didn't encounter anyone. It's not the intent to use, it's the actual use.
But there it's also no not action. The need to use. That's not in the statute. It's just the use.
You're using
the state
it.
Doesn't have to prove that without it, no entry was possible.
Mm-hmm. But,
and that seems to be what you're arguing.
But here he didn't use it. He
so
sneaked
what?
Into
why,
the
why
garage.
Does he have to have used it?
Because
I mean,
statute,
you say you have to use it on a person to threaten them. Why isn't that a separate issue than using it to effect entry, which he did? Because it made his entry safer for him.
Except well, we don't know that. He was sneaking into the garage. He triggered the
sensor. With the gun in his hand.
He was sneaking into the garage, and he didn't use the weapon to shoot the garage. He didn't use it to threaten anyone to enter. So he could have sneaked into the garage with or without the gun out. And this...
He was pointing it at her with both hands, like this. He wasn't threatening her even before she turned around?
Yes, Your Honor.
He wasn't using it to enter, even under these Court of Appeals cases?
Yes, Your Honor. It's just like in State v. Carpenter, when the man entered the house with a rifle in his arms, he didn't use that rifle to enter the house. It didn't aid in his entry.
Your time is up.
Your Honor, we'll hear. I saw the red light, but can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Well, thank you. I a lot of this stuff is situational. I was in the court at 5 in the morning doing my work, and someone broke in. I'm on the 12th floor. Someone broke in the first floor. And they charged me with first-degree burglary because I was in the building. And now he had no clue I was in the building. He had never saw him. but was still charged, and I was interviewed, because it was a first-degree burglary, because I was in the building, and someone was in the building, so it becomes a first-degree burglary. So some of it's just a situation you have, gun or no gun, it's just the fact you have it.
I agree with that, Your Honor.
Thank you.
That was properly charged as first-degree burglary in your situation. Yes.
Thank you.
May it please the court?
Certainly.
There are two ways this court can affirm defendant's armed criminal action conviction. And the easiest way is just based on Ms. Harvey's testimony that she saw the defendant coming in the garage with both hands on the gun, and so she fled. However, the state is asking the court to go farther and hold that there should be no requirement that Ms. Harvey did actually see the defendant come into the garage displaying the weapon. Whether a defendant committed armed criminal action should not depend on the victim's perceptions. It should depend on his actions. Otherwise, we might have a situation where the victim is blind. The defendant should not be immunized from being guilty because the victim physically can't see him enter. Or you can imagine a situation where the victim is not at the point of entry, but there's surveillance video showing the defendant entering, brandishing a weapon. These situations highlight why there should be no requirement that the victim witness the defendant enter into the structure. Displaying a gun is using a gun. Displaying a gun accomplishes the purpose of preventing any resistance, overcoming any resistance to the entry. It gives the defendant confidence to do things he otherwise would not do. And requiring...
But with or without the gun, it would still have been illegal entry.
Correct. And requiring the victim to see the defendant enter is adding an element of use to the statute that it is not
just
there.
Substantiate the fact that he actually used the gun. Same as the videotape, substantiate the fact that he used the gun.
The videotape in the surveillance example?
Right.
What the state is saying is as long as there's sufficient evidence that he used the gun, there should be no requirement that shows that this requiring the victim to see him use the gun. That is what the state is arguing.
There's no requirement that they see it.
Correct.
There's a requirement that something substantiates that he used it.
That is what the state
is. It may be them seeing it. It could be a videotape.
Correct.
Opposing counsel's argument is that it does require you see it or somehow be aware of it as the victim, because otherwise you're just potentially going to use it. You're not actually using it. Can you address that?
Yes. You are actually using it regardless of whether the victim sees it or not. And the use is having the weapon out being displayed. That there is the use because it is overcoming, it is readying the defendant to overcome any resistance, and it gives the defendant confidence that he would not have to commit the crime. So therefore, displaying the gun is using the gun. It's not just intending to use the gun. Otherwise, the gun would be somewhere else on the defendant or not there at all. If Your Honors have no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your efficient use of your time.
The state's argument is essentially that the use of a gun simply equals the possession of a gun. And that's what this state...
She didn't argue that it's okay if it's in a holster. And she said it's out and
display. Well, I don't know what the difference between... If confidence is the rationale, I don't know what the difference between having it out versus having it in a holster would be. So, in effect, her argument is that the use equals the possession, and that's not the statute the legislature wrote. The legislature wrote that you actually have to use the weapon to commit the crime.
Okay. So, the way you look at it is assuming that there was nobody who saw it, but that there was a security camera. Mm-hmm. And so the way that she'd already gone inside before it started coming in. Mm-hmm. The way you view the definition of use is that if he has the gun out and it's not what trips the sensor, he just didn't use it.
Yes, Your Honor.
If he has the gun out and it trips the sensor, he used it.
Yes, Your
Honor. So you're looking at it as this is one of those deals where it just doesn't matter unless you're using it to break the window or shoot through the door or...
Or implicitly threaten. Yes.
If you get into implicitly threatening, doesn't that really undermine your argument?
No, because implicitly threatening someone still requires that person to see you before you enter. The Court of Appeals in Oboski made that part of their holding, that the victim had seen him enter or seen him with a gun before entry. That was a central part of their holding. And I believe this court should follow that. As to the factual question of whether she saw him before he entered, I would point this court to page 222 of the transcript. I think this makes it very clear. She said, if the garage is going down and something triggers the motion, it will be like, if it gets triggered, it will go back up. I kind of heard it. I heard my garage. I was listening to it as I was walking in, and I heard the garage going down slowly. I heard it go eek, eek, eek. And then it went back up. I turned around. A reasonable juror could not disregard that testimony.
Well, you're saying, I think, that you could infer he had it out before he entered the garage, but
yes,
you can't infer that she saw it before he entered the
garage. Because he entered the garage, based on State v. Peaks, the decision from this court in the 1950s, putting any part of your body into the inhabitable structure constitutes the burglary. So he entered by triggering, because the sensors, exhibits 10 and 11, were located, it looks like, a couple feet inside the garage. So once he has triggered it, he has entered. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.